Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Dublin Airport's Platinum VIP Terminal. Experience private check-in, suites for relaxation, and then chauffeur-driven to your aircraft.
Hello and welcome to this Playback Best of the Year. All the stories making headlines, the interviews that moved us, the spats that had you screaming at the radio, the bits that might have made you smile, and everything in between. Not least the changes here in the Montrose mothership. Buckle up, it is going to be quite the ride. And the year started with this.
Gerry, Storm Éowyn. Give me the picture nationwide at, what, 6:15 this morning.
Storm Éowyn is an extreme storm and it has already broken records for the all-time mean wind speed and all-time gust for Ireland.
I was in touch with relatives myself in Athenry at 7 o'clock this morning. The power has been out there. What they mentioned above all was that noise. Everyone in the house waking up 3 o'clock in the morning, the howling, the screeching cacophony of sounds that people are utterly unfamiliar with on this island. The sounds and howls of the Gaoithe outside putting the frighteners on them, as it has over much of the land. The weather...
I'm seeing pictures of sheets of galvanised down streets. There are trees across entrances. There's scaffolding down, as I said earlier. Garden walls lying in the garden. Keep them coming in. 0870 32.
Ryan Tapley, ESB Networks Manager. 715,000 people without power. Your staff have a huge job ahead of you.
As the figure stands at the moment, this is unprecedented. It's widespread and the damage is extensive to the network. It's going to be easily a week, if not more, before we have all customers restored.
And if that wasn't enough to kick off the year, the Dáil returned and whipped up a storm all of its own over the allocation of opposition speaking rights to government-supporting independent TDs.
You're making a mockery of democracy here.
Deputy County, you're out of order. Please resume your seat. Please, allow me. Deputy Carty.
I'm going to give you one opportunity. I'm afraid, resume your seat. If we're going to be left. Yeah. Thank you. We will suspend. Deputy, please resume your seat. Resume your seats. I am going to be left with no option, Deputy. I will be left with no option. We suspend the House. I suspend the House for 15 minutes.
Ooh, and we will not put a nice fade on that one. Yes, suspended not once but twice by Ciarán Cóirle Verona Murphy. Míle murder and a tumultuous start to the Dáil. Meanwhile, in April, up in space, a few unlikely visitors in the form of the all-female Blue Origin crew, Katy Perry and pals, remember that one? They went up for 11 minutes and back down again.
I'm going to tell you something right now. You are officially an astronaut.
Thank you so much.
How do you feel?
I feel super connected to love. So connected to love. I think this experience has shown me you never know how much love is inside of you, like how much love you have to give, mm-hmm. and how loved you are until the day you launch.
Oh, nothing wrong with the love. Go, Katy. And while many were in awe of the project, many others were not. The cost, both financially and also to the planet. But astronaut Chris Hadfield spoke to Brendan of the dream of going into space.
Spaceflight's younger than I am. And from the time that Yuri Gagarin flew on April the 12th, 1961, you know, it was 8 years and they walked on the moon. And so there was a great rush of human capability and pride and opportunity and optimism that came with that.
Okay, so I think it was the moon landing was a big moment for you as a kid, was it, in terms of deciding your future?
Me and a third of the world, actually. Yeah. It was the most viewed event in human history at that point. But for me specifically, I watched that happen. And I thought, if those three people can do it, because there was Mike Collins orbiting the moon while Neil and Buzz stepped on the surface of the moon, they're not magic. They're not, I don't know, supermen or something. They're just people. Then why can't I do it? And I thought, of all the choices I have here in the summer that I turned 10, that's the coolest thing that's out there. And if that's a thing I can do, I want to do that.
Meanwhile, here on Earth, but perhaps with an eye to the heavens, on Thursday, May 8th, a little after 5 o'clock Irish time.
For the moment, because I'm looking at the screen here and it seems we have white smoke.
Habemus Papam, Cormac, and rather the surprise here in the Vatican. I don't know if you can hear in the background, the bells of St. Peter are now ringing through Vatican City and ringing through Rome. White smoke in the last 60 seconds has come from the stovepipe atop the Sistine Chapel. And this really, as you say, is quite the surprise. This perhaps...
And the 267th Pope was selected by 133 cardinals on the fourth count. Cardinal Robert Prevost, now Pope Leo XIV, will lead members of the Catholic Church's global community of 1.4 billion people. Morning Ireland brought us these voices of the faithful reacting to the news.
It's great. He's a young man. He seems to be following in the footsteps of Pope Francis. And please God, you know, he's great for the young and for... the underprivileged and the poor.
I guess we're happy, number one, that he's from the United States. And number two, he's from Villanova University, which is right in our area. And, you know, we're hoping that he'll be a great leader of our church.
The vibe I got from listening to him speak as he came out was really wonderful.
I'm just excited to see what he's going to do. I love that he prayed the Hail Mary and... Yeah, I'm just happy.
I know the Catholic faith is the Catholic faith, but, you know, I like to open things up because Pope Francis was starting to do it and he showed that as well by the amount of cardinals he elected. Please God, be a good future, good future.
I hope so, that he will be, I think, a great Pope at the right time, multilingual, carrying on the tradition of Francis, so hopeful.
I would hope great. And he's American, which I find is he's interesting. He'd be up to our friend over across the pond, but anyway, we won't go into that now this evening. And he's the right age. He's, you know, say 2 years younger than me, a lot more wiser, I'd say. But anyway, but I wish him well.
For Morning Ireland. And can we move from the Pope to Bono? Is that a segue? Debate amongst yourselves. He spoke to Brendan when the documentary Stories of Surrender was released, and they talked music, of course they did, but also activism, outrage and empathy.
It's such a strange, this competitive empathy, you know, that's going around. I feel this wound more than you, and my emergency is more important than your emergency. And, you know, outrage, when I was younger, I had a lot of rage. Yes, and outrage, in some respects, was enough to write a certain kind of a song. But as I got older, I demanded more of myself. I looked towards outcomes. And so I became that most boring of all things, a single-issue protagonist, working with both sides of... whatever side there was to get, you know, AIDS medicines to people who couldn't afford them in far off places that didn't vote in America or the UK or wherever. It might be bewildering, but I was trying to not speak about stuff that I didn't really understand.
And he talked about being present in his life as best he can.
You talk in the show, in the film, about the dysfunction of wanting to be great at something, how you might not want to give up the emptiness that gave you everything, and how even for years, even when you were at home, you weren't home. Are you better at that now? Do you still sacrifice all to the dysfunction, or when you're home now, are you home?
I am very clear about the most important thing in my life is my family. You two is an extension of that, but it is not that. They're a different kind of family. I went in search of alternate families. You know, even the One campaign or Red, they're all bands, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you kind of, you know, I ran away to join the circus, but the circus, the circus was just another family, and I'm grateful to them so grateful to my mates, but no. Ali's at the center of my universe as long as she let me be. And yeah.
Hey, Bono, what would Bob, your dad, have said about this film?
Ah, that's a... He just... Well, I think we've enough Bono by now, he'd say. I think we might have enough. Would you mind... And no more songs about your dead ma, your dead da, you know, the north of Ireland, Africa. Just get over the tragedy, get into the comedy, would you? Give us all a break. I think that'd be...
Okay.
I think that'd be Bob's.
Bono with Brendan in May. Also preoccupying the nation that month...
Skirts are shorts covered in a fabric that makes them look like a skirt.
Ah, yes, the coy love child of the skirt and the short. We give you the skirt. Who knew that this would dominate our airwaves and our pitches? The players were standing firm for choice. Here's Sarah with Waterford veteran Niamh Rockett.
The issue of skirts, I know this has blown up last weekend. I know it was an issue as well last year after the Congress vote. But has it been an issue for you throughout your career?
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, I go training in shorts. I go running. If I'm doing an outside running session, I do it in shorts. If I was going training and one of the girls is wearing a skirt, you'd be kind of looking at her as if she had nearly 10 heads at the moment, you know. It's way more comfortable training in shorts. I don't know anyone on Air Waterford Camogie team that enjoys wearing the skirt. And to be honest with you, when you're playing a match, where I'm after playing for obviously the last 17 years and I've gone from junior to intermediate to senior, and when you're playing a match, the last thing, knowing the growth of Camogie and Waterford in particular the last couple of years and how professional it's gone, the last thing you want to be worrying about is how you look like in a skirt or if the photographer is going to take a picture in of you in a compromised position wearing the skirt, you know. And
it's interesting.
It's not
so do
comfortable.
You feel,
like, you know?
Is it you feel more exposed in a skirt than you would in shorts?
Definitely more exposed in a skirt as opposed to shorts. Like we were playing even Tipperary 2 weeks ago in the Munster semi-final, and I fell down. I got tripped up in the match, and the first thing I could think of is, oh my God, my skirt's up on my back. I should pull it down rather than, and I was half winded on the ground. So right. It was the first thing I had thought about, as opposed to if you fall in shorts, no one, you're not thinking of what's the shorts like behind me, do you know? And yeah. I suppose it's a no brainer really for practicality.
And after a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, the choice was indeed extended to all. Here in Montrose in May, the first of so many changes.
After 37 wonderful years here in RTE and 27 years presenting Liveline, I just wanted to share a few words with you as I prepare to move on.
And that would be just the start of the changes. But before Joe headed off, he did make time for this.
You have a Metallica drumstick.
I do, and I have a pick.
Okay. And what's your favourite album?
Saint Anger.
Okay. This is Metallica, Master of Puppets. Here they come with rip-roaring sound, the rip-roaring electric sound. Betty. That's called Master of Puppets. Letty.
It is. It was used in Stranger Things in their most recent season.
Okay. And just for people like myself who couldn't make out the lyrics of Master of Puppets, they were as follows. End of passion play, crumbling away, I'm your source of self-destruction. Veins that pump with fear, sucking dark, it's clear. Leading on your death's construction. Taste me, you will see. More is all you need. Dedicated. How I'm come crawling faster. Obey your master. Is that exactly Seamus Heaney, is it?
Way to go, Joe, secret Metallica fan. And while many thought it was the end of an era...
Lifeline without Joe Duffy will be like Vegas without Elvis, be like the Vatican without the Holy Father, the Late Late without Gabo, Dublin without Bewleys, country music without Daniel O'Donnell, and Kerry football without Mick O'Connor.
Maybe so, but if we've learned nothing else this year, it's how quickly things can change. And as the year ended, it was Ciarán Cuddihy who was anointed to take the chair. On services ahead, Brenda Donoghue spent 24 hours at the Galway Plaza off the M6 on the Galway to Dublin motorway. She met this couple for whom it was love over the petrol pumps.
Hello. Hi, Kai.
Kai.
Hi. Hello, gorgeous.
Sarah and Sean and baby Kai, what a story ye have to tell. Because Kai wouldn't be here if he hadn't met here while working.
I started working here in the August of 2016, and then I met him maybe 3 weeks into work. We never looked back.
But that wasn't quite how it went down, because Sean was not above a little bit of subterfuge and downright lying.
So I had asked her numerous times to come for a pint and she kept refusing. So one day I invited everyone out for a pint, the whole workforce, and then I texted them all and told them all it was cancelled, but I told her no one showed up. And that was how we started. That was how I got her.
From services ahead. Now, it was hard to get away from President Donald Trump this year, especially if you tuned into Sunday with Miriam, with comedian and actor Rosie O'Donnell, a recent immigrant to Ireland and no friend of the current POTUS. And when the second term of the Trump presidency happened, she decided to move here. She's now living in Sandymount. She loves it. Of course, she is very Irish. As a child, she visited her cousins in Pettigo on the Donegal-Fermanagh border.
My father would teach us the Irish rebel songs and we would sing them when we were there and in the car as loud as we could. And now I think of it, that would be a funny scene in a movie to have all of these American kids, of tiny little American kids singing, Roddy McCauley goes to die on the bridge of Tuam today.
Go with the Rosie. Good for a sing-song. Also in August, Brendan O'Connor had a very interesting conversation with comedian Alison Spittle.
What could possibly go wrong here? A middle-aged man is going to ask a younger woman about her relationship with her body.
I was very interested in talking to you about it because you were fat and now you're not. So I'm happy to talk. I'm happier to talk to it with you than I am with other people.
And that was how they started a conversation that was honest, angry and incredibly insightful about being fat and the judgments we bring. Alison Spittle had had a very serious health scare and had been put on injections for weight loss. Not something she'd particularly wanted to do. But now, having lost weight, how people view her has changed. And that is very telling.
The relationship with the person before...
Yeah.
I know, it's a very complicated one. Like,
it
isn't
is.
It?
I don't want to denounce her. I'd hate her, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Because I remember, like...
And she wasn't, like, unhappy or lacking in something or...
No, and that's the... And that's... But the thing is, like, I was on Pointless Celebrities this year. It came out this year, but it was filmed 2 years ago. And it was the fattest I ever was. And I watched it with my family. And one member of my family turned around to me and goes... You're half the size you were. Look at you there. You were so fat. You're half the size you were there. And I'm looking at
triumphantly, like they were saying it to you, congratulations.
Congratulations. But that was the happiest day of my life. I love Pointless. Like Pointless is like one of the biggest ambitions I ever wanted in my life. And that was the happiest day of my life. And I was the fattest I ever was. And I'm not going to look back at that and go, I wish I was thinner. I wish I got the question right at the end of the round where I'd win the money. Okay. Like that's my regret. But not being like being fat is just like, it just feels weird. It feels weird to denounce myself for something.
What was your attitude to it? Did you have feelings around it? Did you think about it much?
Like, about
did
being
you think
fat?
Was it making you less happy or making your life smaller?
Yeah, I didn't like the way the people were treating me.
Okay.
Like, I did not like that. I didn't like if there was a fella drunk on the train, that like the interaction between me and him would probably end in him calling me a fat bitch. Like, that was annoying. I didn't like... Because I think like women have to deal a lot with like what do you call it? Street harassment. It wasn't as if I was like waiting to be wolf whistled, but I was waiting for someone to demean me. And I always felt like, I always kind of felt annoyed that to be conventionally attractive was seen as like a value judgment. Do you know, that always annoyed me.
And this year more than any, more and more people are taking medication to lose weight.
These injections are going to get cheaper. They're going to be more, there's going to be more widespread in the next 10 years. And people are going to be looking at fat people and go, why do you exist? And I shouldn't be, like, fat people aren't a problem that needs to be eradicated.
Meanwhile, over the summer, Oliver took to the road and hit Cundaway O. And Fergus Sweeney was in Mayo at Blacksod Lighthouse on the Erris Peninsula, North Mayo, mind you. And this lighthouse is square.
We are one of the very few square lighthouses that you will find around the coastline of Ireland. And that's a result of the budget at the time when they came to construct the building. Okay. Yeah, they had £2,440, so they couldn't afford the labour cost to cut your round tower. So they decided to build us square, and we're glad they did.
But it could be a pretty tough life. And if you were on Blacksod Lighthouse 12 miles out to sea, well, chin up your childer.
I saw downstairs a thing about hooks for children on the walls of the little island rock.
I guess you could have up on, you know, 9 children living on that island for up to 8 months. And of course, the parents were busy. It's maybe 300 metres by 60 metres wide. So they didn't have a babysitting service. So they did the next best thing they could. So they lashed their children onto metal posts around the island. And that way could get on with their work. And, you know, their little children wouldn't disappear off the side of the island, you know.
And you wouldn't want that. But we couldn't leave a Mayo programme without this nugget from Owen Colgan. You'll know him from the Hardy Books, and he gave us this ode to Belmullet.
The mullet. God, I'd love to touch your hair. It's not fair the way it flows. And what's that around your nose? A tash, no less. I see you keep it very tidy, like a man doing the shopping on a Friday. Do you mind telling me what product you use? A can of beer. I knew it smelt of booze. And oh God, look at that, right there at the back, a mullet, blowing in the breeze, floating like a sneeze. Jesus, tonight it's some sight. 2 inches of luscious locks, call the cops, because that can't be natural, pal. Hey, before you go, I'd love to know, do you think a man like me could be so cheeky as to grow my own, a mullet I call home? Wait, I never caught your name, let me guess, is it James, Graham, or is it Eamon? No, Derek? Yeah, I thought so. Goodbye then. And take care. I'll never forget the mullet man's hair.
On filler, Owen Colgan.
Stretching the definition of a filler, in fairness. Now, this year brought the death of 2 broadcasters very dear to listeners' hearts. On July 31st, the death was announced of Sean Rocks, the presenter of Arena since 2009. Writers, painters, poets, playwrights, musicians and creatives of all hues paid tribute to one of their own, and a broadcaster who knew the work, who focused on the work, and in doing so, brought the very best to the listener. Here is just one tribute from writer Anne Enright.
Oh, he was so unprepossessing, so easygoing in his style that I think people might underestimate what a terrific international standard interviewer he really was. The fact that he made you feel safe was fantastic. You knew he wasn't trying to catch you out in some way. The breadth and the depth of his cultural experience, the fact that he'd read the damn book, yes, and the feeling that, you know, he might have reservations about some aspects of it. I think he had a classical sensibility at heart, but he wasn't afraid of disruptors. He wasn't afraid of young artists. He was just extraordinarily accommodating, such a generous host. It was always great to chat. I used to call him Shawnee in my head, but nobody can. I don't know, did anyone else call him Shawnee in to talk to Shawnee Rocks?
Yeah.
Anne Enright on the late and very wonderful Sean Rocks. And on October 2nd, the death of Moncon McGann. His enthusiasm for the Irish language, his sense of wonder and mischief at being alive on this earth, all of this and more made his radio programmes such a joy to listen to. Here he's talking about the Ice Age and its aftermath in Ireland.
stubby, rugged evergreens, preparing the way for a few lone birch seeds. Once even one of these stoic pioneer birches managed to take root and establish itself, it began sending out 15 million feather-light seeds each and every year to colonise the land and enrich the soil for others. Soon we had woodland, and along comes the giant deer and the reindeer. The hare, the otter, the Irish stoat and badger, the natterjack toad and birds and bats and insects. And plants too, of course, like St. Debbuck's heath, fleabane, kidney saxifrage and the arbutus tree, all coming across land bridges from the British mainland and across the ocean from Europe. What the glaciers left behind them became our playground. Here is where we blossomed as a race. We cleared the forests, worked the land to feed and shelter ourselves, and in doing so, created much of the landscape that we know today.
The voice of the late Máincón Meáin. Described by the UN as a genocide, after 2 years of vicious and devastating bloodshed in Gaza, in October, a US-brokered ceasefire. On Morning Ireland, Cian got this analysis from Nicholas Roger, a journalist based in Israel.
The idea right now is that, from the Israeli side, is that Hamas will basically disappear and that Israel will retain some kind of security control over the Strip. It doesn't have to be, you know, again, full colonization like it was before 2005 or like it is in the West Bank today, but at least some kind of liberty of action. And from Hamas's point of view, it's almost the opposite. They want to retain, you know, they've said yesterday, their leaders said yesterday, that they wanted to retain some power in the street, some liberty of movement inside the Strip, and also the liberty to keep carrying arms and be an armed movement, some kind of proto-state, and also to fight for national sovereignty for the Palestinians. And that obviously means having some kind of say over their own security. Those two things are radically opposed views. And obviously, since 7th of October, it's even worse than it was before. The two-state solution had lost all traction before 7th of October. Today, both people do not want to give the other the kind of leeway that would represent.
And while the ceasefire was holding, more or less, the people in Gaza were still suffering. Earlier this month, a final conversation with Tess Ingram of UNICEF. She's about to finish up her term in Gaza. And she spoke to Katie on Drive Time about the ongoing catastrophic humanitarian situation there.
I'm conscious that Gaza has slipped a little bit from the headlines since the ceasefire came into play in early October. How have conditions been there since then?
Unfortunately, living in a ceasefire for families in Gaza hasn't meant living in safety or living with ease. Yes, it's an improvement from what we saw before the ceasefire, but we're comparing a catastrophe to what remains a challenging situation, to say the least. It hasn't really meant an end to the airstrikes and to the shelling. More than 70 children have been killed in the past 8 weeks, 70, 7-0. And this is unacceptable. Children must be protected. So we really call for the terms of this ceasefire to be adhered to and for the aid to flow, because for families on the ground, they are still struggling on a daily basis to access what they need to survive.
And she spoke about the ramifications of prolonged hunger.
I know, Tess, that you've spoken about how particularly worried you are about the domino effect of this acute hunger, with malnourished mothers giving birth to premature and very low birth weight babies.
It's something I've been watching for many months now, and I see it everywhere I go in Gaza. A mum talking about how she is malnourished, but she's giving whatever food she can to her infant, about women who are struggling to breastfeed, and doctors in neonatal intensive care units telling me about the high number of babies that they have there being born early or underweight because of the mother's health. this situation is going to have a long tail because we're still seeing high numbers of pregnant women with malnutrition, which means small and early babies are likely to be born for many, many months to come. And to get on top of that situation, we really do need to see a comprehensive response that addresses maternal health as well as make sure that hospitals can keep these premature babies alive. And for UNICEF's part, we really are addressing that on all fronts. We're bringing in the nutrition supplies for pregnant and breastfeeding women. We're restocking neonatal intensive care units with incubators. But much more needs to be done quickly because the crisis is still of a scale that we haven't yet addressed.
Tess Ingram of UNICEF on Drive Time. And in December, RTE made the decision not to participate in the forthcoming Eurovision or broadcast the competition. And on Morning Ireland, this reaction from Alon Emir, former member of the Israeli Eurovision delegation. And well, he won't be missing us.
RTE said that they felt Ireland's participation remained unconscionable given the appalling loss of lives in Gaza. RTV in Slovenia said the public had demanded that we say no to the participation of any country that attacks another country. Dutch broadcaster Avril Tros said that participation under the current circumstances is incompatible with the public values that are essential
me.
To us.
The hypocrisy shocks me. No one said anything 20 years ago when the UK invaded Iraq and about 500,000 people were killed. Nobody accused them of genocide.
Russia and Belarus were asked to withdraw before they were asked to leave a number of years ago.
No. I'm sorry, that's incorrect. They were banned from Eurovision because the news department of the broadcaster was not independent and could not criticize the government, which is a key element of being a member of the EBU.
And how is this news being received in Israel?
Nobody really cares. We're happy that we're in the contest. We're sad to see countries withdrawing. It's your decision if you want to act like that. The contest is a competition between the broadcasters, not the countries. There's a big difference. What's happening in Gaza, it's okay to criticize the Israeli government. We do that all the time. The vast majority of Israelis do not want Netanyahu. We don't want this Israeli government. It's fine to criticize the government, but Eurovision is a different thing. It's the broadcaster, not the country. We need to separate between the two things.
Will Ireland be missed?
Listen, you haven't sent a decent song in 25 years. Come on, take a year off, think about it, and return stronger and hopefully be in the top five for a change.
Ooh, that hurts. Leaving that there for now. In September, the nation was cheering on some rather treacherous liars, deceivers and manipulators. We give you The Traitors Ireland. It was compulsively watchable, not least for Siobhan McSweeney. That eyebrow flanked by the hounds, never mind the rig out. Oh yeah.
Your version of The Traitors, the Irishness is lovely. What unique traits do you think this one, some of them were evident very early on. It's very different to every other version of The Traitors we've seen.
What do you think, Oliver? Like, I'm interested in that because I sort of feel it's sort of a dangerous road to go down of the whole sort of exceptionalism kind of thing, that every country has a unique thing. But I do think just the look of it, I know that like it was one of the people involved in the franchise of the show was quite amused over how quickly everybody started chatting to each other when the contestants came in.
Yeah.
That usually takes a while for people in other countries to warm up and whatever, but not in Slane. They were chatting away to each other and accusing each other before they had even sat down for the first cup of tea.
I just love the sarcasm. Are you a traitor? All day long. That's me. All day long.
Yeah. I love the phrase, I am, yeah.
I am, yeah. It's so disarming and that doesn't exist in the other versions.
Yeah.
It's a cuteness, isn't it? It's cuteness.
It's, by God, there's a lot of cuteness there. I'm always surprised when people say that Ireland's such a friendly place and you're like, we're smiling. I wouldn't turn my back on anyone.
Borderline cackle. and new to the parish at 145, Kieran Cuddihy. In his first week, he got into the flying of the Irish flag, because at this stage there'd be few places in the country that haven't seen the tricolour up on a lamppost. From County Meath, here's Andrea.
Pure and simple, it's racism. I mean, we can call it, we can put different hats on it, we can, you know, say whatever we want. But I had noticed around Halloween that there was flags were kind of appearing out of nowhere on our lampposts and poles. And I have a daughter who lives in London, and we had already had the discussion, as you're probably well aware, that the St. George's flag was put up all over England, and the connotations that has with the past and racism and, you know, far-right movements and things. So I suppose when I saw it coming up... Now, listen, I didn't jump. I'm not cynical. I kind of thought, oh, OK. And we had a new road that was that, you know, had just opened, far side in Avon, to join the two sides. And some people said, oh, it's for the new road. And I was thinking, no, that hasn't happened in a long time, the flags go up. So, you know, I held back and realised, I quickly realised there's nothing to do with the new road, you know, especially where the flags are. You know, they kind of stand there. They're everywhere, basically.
And is there any messages written on them, Andrea? You know, to the suggestion that they're racist. That's your interpretation.
No, there isn't. But I mean, I suppose coming as a history teacher, but just as my knowledge of how flags are being used now across Europe in certain areas, countries, towns, cities, and they're flying at half mast. And symbols are important. One, we don't need language, so everyone knows what a flag is. The countries, if they know their flags. So I know the connotations it has. Basically, if you look to social media, they all have the little Irish flag, and I know straight away what that means. And I know people will say, oh, look, she's giving out about her Irish flag. And no, I'm not. I'm a proud Irish woman. Mm. I'm proud European. I'm proud. Listen, I'm just a human at the end of the day. That's where I see myself. I know right from wrong. And the flag is a symbol of unity and inclusion for all traditions in this country. All traditions. And that's what it means.
But with a different view, Christopher. Also, as it happens, from County Meath.
It's a totally different situation when people are coming in busloads into towns and nobody knows where they're from, nobody knows anything about them. And hopefully the most of them people will get jobs, will come good and will work with us.
Yeah.
But there's a fear there. And anybody that has an opinion and says, I am nervous and I am afraid of these people because I don't know who they are, is called racist.
Is that true, though, Christopher?
Of course it's true. Absolutely.
That if somebody just says, I'm nervous or I've got questions, that they're called racist.
I'll prove to you how it's racist. Where is the debate? Where is the debate on mainstream media? Where is the debate on RTE or the station that you used to be on?
We're having a debate now.
No. We have people in this country. We have some fantastic journalists. We have intelligent people who have been literally cancelled because they've come out and said anything that doesn't fit the government script, is what I'd call it.
Yeah,
and
Christopher, I can't speak on behalf of anyone else, but I mean, I've been working in what people would call mainstream media for several years. I've lost count of the amount of debates I've had about migration and flags and IPAS centres and the asylum process. I mean, it's been had all the time. We're not doing it morning, noon and night.
No, but you can't talk about one issue morning, noon and night. The debate is always between two people that are on the same side, only that they have two different beliefs to it. You never actually bring somebody on, or nobody on mainstream media actually has a proper debate, because the people who would actually just come out and say it would not be brought on to shows. It's actually a miracle I was brought on here, because I had a fair argument with the man who I was speaking to at the start. But we have to go back to the flags.
From Liveline. On October 24th, we voted to elect our next president. It had been a campaign that had started slowly and then got massively dramatic. Mairead McGuinness stepped down for health reasons, Heather Humphreys stepped up, and for Fianna Fáil, after much huffing and puffing, Jim Gavin got the nod. Until this happened. It was a Sunday. No sooner had the week in politics ended than Sandra Hurley joined Fran McNulty on This Week.
But I thought there was a particular difficulty for Jim Gavin. There was a story yesterday in the Irish Independent with a former tenant of his saying that he overpaid rent and that he was owed €3,300. Jim Gavin was asked about that today. Now, he didn't go as far as saying that he definitely owes the tenant the money, but he said he was sorry, he said he was dealing with it and he said he would address it. And I think that is a potential problem.
As it would prove to be, and by week's end, he would be gone. And after all that, it was independent TD Catherine Connolly who romped home to the Auras. Her presidency was inaugurated in Dublin Castle on November 11th.
I stand before you humbly and proudly as the 10th president of this beautiful country. The people have spoken and have given their president a powerful mandate to articulate their vision for a new republic. A republic worthy of its name, where everyone is valued and diversity is cherished, where sustainable solutions are urgently implemented, and where a home is a fundamental human right.
President Catherine Connolly, a momentous day. But for radio listeners, that was also the week that saw a big shake-up here at the Montrose mothership. Ray Darcy, after 11 years, no more. And if that wasn't enough, hang on to your hats. Take it away, Evelyn.
Today's announcement of an all-new schedule on RT Radio 1 marks the biggest changes in the schedule for many years. The Director of Audio, Patricia Monaghan, has confirmed that the new schedule will see David McCullough starting the Today Show at a new time slot of 9 a.m, with Oliver Callan moving to an extended two-hour programme at 11 a.m. The News at 1 follows with Rachel English, and then after much speculation, Kieran Cuddy has been confirmed as the new presenter of Liveline in its established slot of 1:45 p.m. Louise Duffy moves to a mid-afternoon show, hosting a programme from 3 to 4, and more changes too with Drive Time, as Katie Hannon and Colm Mungon take the helm of that show with a new starting time of 4 p.m. It will be a two-hour programme, and there will be a new daily sports show from 6 p.m.
And now we have a whole new schedule. What a year it has been, gentle listener. But life went on, believe it or not. And out there in the big bad world, well, this made the cut as the Oxford Word of the Year.
Rage baiting.
Ooh, rage baiting, a close cousin of the clickbait. But this one lures you in because, ooh, just one click and you're fuming. With David McCullough, here's journalist Kate De Mulder.
Why do we fall for it?
Rage is a very enticing emotion. It is the reason that laws have been changed. It is the reason that policy has been changed. And it is the reason that the world keeps pushing on. And so people have copped that these are the things that stir people up. And I even see, I don't know if you're an I'm a Celebrity watcher, but I even see as I'm flicking through the internet this morning, obviously several things happened last night that incurred some kind of rage. And it gets people to post as well. So yeah, it's a very stirring emotion and we all get swept up in it very easily.
Okay, and some people are making a lot of money at it.
Oh, certainly, yeah. And also platforms are now gearing people towards it. So whereas at previous times an influencer wanted us to love them and kind of see them as a deity almost and to follow their every word, they're now looking for us to spend more time in their profile, and that is done easier by incurring some rage. And this can happen in kind of high, low ways. I've seen some previous ones where people have gotten those kind of four-pronged Kit Kats and bitten across the whole thing, which seems to incur a little bit of rage from some people. And it can also venture into really dangerous territory. I've seen some other medical gurus, we might call them, and say that cancer could be cured from some kind of cocktail of vegetable juices that they're selling or whatever. So you can get it in high and low ways. But yeah, it definitely gauges our intention.
Was it across here? Well, certainly online. But proving that just when you think you know what the future holds, this happens.
As the ball slides, he goes short. And Karkaish, his Liverpool colleague, rolls it back to him. And it's drilled in and he scores. It's headed into the back of the net. It's an early goal. And he runs up and he drills it low past the keeper. But there's no stopping Troy Parrott these days.
Look out.
And Varga winding up the shot. Oh, what a goal that is. In the 37th minute. And Hungary go back in front.
I'm gone, it's your business. If it's home, it's every business.
But Scales works it forward. Now it's Zaz. It's Troy Parrott clipping the ball in past the goalkeeper. And it's 2-2. It's Parrott yet again.
Ooh, oh, you know I didn't mean
it's Queeby Keller on halfway. Ascended forward. Ireland looking for the winning goal. The knockdown by Ron. Oh, it is! They've done it! Remarkable! What a moment! And Ireland heading for the playoffs. Remarkable.
Oh, I'm heading to the A&E. I need some tranquilizers. Absolutely amazing.
And the referee blows the full-time whistle. They've done it. It's extraordinary. Troy Parrott. Troy Parrott. Troy Parrott. Hat-trick man.
Oh, Triple Parrott. The wonder that has us all getting a bit hot under the collar for 2026. And that is almost it for this year's Playback Best of the Year. A massive thank you to all who got in touch throughout the year with suggestions for the programme. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, a very special shout out to Ms. H, the keenest ears in the West. We'll finish with an artist making a lot of waves this year. Here's CMAT.